Our first reading is the Charter of the United Nations. We, the people of the United Nations, determined to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human spirit, in the equal rights of men and women, and of nations small and large, to promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom, and for these ends to practice tolerance and to live together in peace as good neighbors, to unite our strength to maintain international peace and security, to ensure that armed forces shall not be used save in the common interest, to employ internal machinery in the promotion of the economic and social advancement of all people, have resolved to combine our efforts to accomplish these aims. Our second reading is an excerpt from Bill Schultz's sermon, Celebration of 20 Years of Partnership, in Kolosvar, July 24, 2010, taken from Partner Church News, autumn 2010. We in the Partner Church movement have not always seen eye to eye. Some Transylvanian Unitarians who visit us in the United States wonder why we laugh in church so frequently and why our ministers do not wear robes to conduct worship services. Does it mean that we do not take our religion seriously? And some American Unitarian Universalists who visit Transylvania wonder why your services are so formal, why your ministers always wear robes, and why there are not more women ministers. We are family. We are partners. We share a great religious heritage, but sometimes we see the world from different perspectives. But far more frequently, what we have discovered in the partner church movement is that different though we may be, what we share as human beings, what we share as people of faith, and what we share as children of God is far more important than what divides us.
Okay. I'd like to talk a little bit today about the history of the Partner Church movement, a little bit about what's going on over there right now, and some recent milestones within the denomination over in Transylvania, and also several upcoming events that you might want to hear about. I also have some slides to show of Jakob Danish Jr.'s wedding, which many of you met him when he was here a few years ago and spoke briefly here at the church, and then his father spoke here about 1997, possibly it was. I don't remember exactly. But I'd like to start out by talking about Transylvanian Unitarianism. It's quite different from what we know here in the United States. The UU denomination and the Transylvanian Unitarian denomination developed along different paths, with the Transylvanian Unitarian denomination being much, much more traditional. They definitely consider themselves Christian, even though they're anti-Trinitarian, but they consider themselves sort of liberal Protestant. Within Transylvania, you have the Catholic Church, the Lutheran Church, the Calvinist Church, I guess we say Reformed, they still say Calvinist, and the Unitarian Church as denominations. And one very interesting thing that you don't see so much in the United States that you see over there, it's just a given that whatever denomination you're born into, you stay in. And in other words, if you're born Unitarian, you stay Unitarian, and your kids are Unitarian, and your grandchildren are Unitarian, and if you're born Catholic, that's the way it proceeds, and Lutheran and Calvinist the same. They found, the people we visited over there found it very odd, for example, that I grew up Methodist and in my 40s became Unitarian, and people just couldn't conceive of that type of a change happening. And it's even more startling to the people over there that we have people in the UU denomination who at one point were Jewish, or at one point were Muslim, or at one point were something, a Buddhist perhaps, and become part of the denomination. This is something that just doesn't happen over there. The Unitarian denomination in Transylvania is very traditional. The service as well, like our service here sort of follows a traditional Protestant template. I say that because I grew up Methodist, as very similar, But over there, it's like ultra traditional, as traditional as you can get, even to the extent that if this were the St. Abraham sanctuary, the men would be sitting here and the women would be sitting over there. The men and women never sit together in the sanctuary. So it's traditional. It's like going back several centuries in the way the church is designed. The other thing, that the ministers are all trained as organists. So the minister will do the readings, do the prayers, and then go up into the balcony and start playing the organ for the hymns. They do the hymns sequentially, so the minister only has to go up and down the stairs once, and then it becomes it's almost comical, because I'll tell a little bit more about the organ later. But when we were over there, the organ it's the organ in the St. Abraham congregation is an 1848. Tracker action organ made, I have the name written here somewhere, it's made in Budapest, I believe. It's one of the few remaining in the world, and they just had that restored. So it's an interesting tradition over there. And as the reading from Bill Schultz's sermon, Bill Schultz was UUA president a number of years ago, and he's one of the people who was heavily involved in the start of the partner church movement. The other thing you'll notice is that the ministers do wear robes that look like something, also look like something out of the 16th century. Yeah.
Projector's going to shut off. Let me stop this.
Oh, you want to stop? Okay. Yeah. I'll keep going. Yeah, I don't want the projector to shut down. So Jakob Danish, the last time I did the service, I showed slides, and you probably saw him in his full outfit with the robe and a hat, like a four-pointed hat, almost looked like a court jester's hat. It's a funny thing. One other thing I'd like to point out about the denomination over there is that, although from looking at it from an American perspective, it sounds traditional, but quite the contrary. The Unitarian denomination in Central Europe has been radical compared to the other denominations. It's been, at certain points, it's been almost like an underground resistance, especially during the communist times when Ceausescu and the government tried to shut down most Christian denominations in the country, but especially the Unitarian denomination. And part of the reason is that the membership of the Unitarian denomination in the Transylvanian part of Romania is ethnically Hungarian. The church services are in Hungarian, and people speak Hungarian at home, although in the office they may speak Romanian. They're all bilingual. Way out in the countryside, they're not bilingual. They're just speaking in Hungarian. But in the cities, Romanian's the business language, and Hungarian is the language at home. So it's a very large ethnic minority in Romania, and quite heavily persecuted over the years. It's a little bit better now, it's a lot better now since the communist government was toppled. And the Unitarians were quite a part of the toppling of the Ceausescu government. This underground resistance was quite strong. The partner church program itself, the sister church program, started between World War I and World War II, but then when the Communist Party came to power in 1945, it sort of fizzled. It was very, very difficult for Americans and Canadians to get in and out of Romania at that time. Actually, Emily Kennedy, who most of you probably remember, went over there during the communist era, and she and Teresa Carlson, who was also a member here, actually got in there and did a tour during the communist time period, and that was rare at the time. But in the late 80s, what reinvigorated the partner church movement, Ceausescu's government had a plan to just bulldoze a lot of the Transylvanian villages that were ethnically Hungarian and quite often Unitarian to make collective farms. And when that happened, there was just an incredible resistance, to the point that the UUA got involved, the denomination Romania got involved, and Chester Atkins, he was a congressman at the time, got involved and actually went over there and got things moving. And at that point, the partner church council was founded a little bit later, but at that point, in 1989, Ceausescu was overthrown, and things liberalized quite dramatically, slowly but surely, after that point. So after 89, more like very early 90s, you're getting the partner church movement taking effect. And today there are 160 U.S. and Canadian congregations have formed partnerships with 144 churches in Transylvania. So it's a pretty big thing, a pretty big organization. And 22 have formed partnerships with congregations in Czech Republic, Hungary, India, Philippines, Poland, and Uganda. So the Unitarian denomination is more widespread than you might think. It's and now there's some emerging relationships in Burundi right now. I think it was Bill Sinkford that was over there recently, but somebody fairly prominent was over in Burundi and Uganda checking things out. But back to this era of the communist movement, some things started. I'd just like to read a couple of very short excerpts from writings of Judith Gelliard, who's one of the, she lives in California now, but she was one of the sort of founders of the partner church movement, and her husband, George Williams. There are two, these are very brief. Let me get these in the right order, just a second. Here we go. This is what, during the communist time over there, the Unitarian denomination had to secretly hide all of its manuscripts and books and primary sources that were, you know, old primary sources from many, many years ago. This is from George Williams. It said, "While Unitarianism was officially recognized as a religious minority, its documents refuted the state mythology that the Hungarian-speaking populations had only recently arrived in Romania. Those documents were therefore treasonous. Since the state was attempting to rewrite history and claim a continuous existence back to the Romans, any documentary evidence to the contrary, including that of Unitarians, was confiscated. Fortunately, all the documents or artifacts which were more than 100 years old were collected and preserved in state archives. Chalices, altar cloths, books, and especially libraries were collected by the state whenever they were found. Thus, the Romanian Academy of Sciences became the repository for Unitarian materials which contradicted the scientific truth that the Hungarians were interlopers in Transylvania. While there were no book burnings, these materials were kept from public use. During this period, scholars entered the state archive and asked for these materials at their peril. The very act of asking to see these documents, which contained contradictory evidence to the origin myth, was reported to the Securitate, Romania's feared secret police. But there's an oddity of totalitarianism, excellent record keeping. Unitarian documents were microfilmed by the state, and a catalog of Unitarian manuscripts was prepared for in-house use at the branch of the archive in Kolozsvár. Unitarian scholars were able to smuggle out a set of these microfilms to hide in Hungary." So that's just an example of what was going on during the Ceausescu government. I mean, it was just, they had to hide things. And one more brief reading. This is from Judith Gelliard, who I mentioned earlier. Now, her father actually was put in jail and died in jail during the Ceausescu regime. He was the minister at Homorod St. Martin, which Montclair originally had a relationship with Homorod St. Martin. It's a bigger church, not terribly far from St. Abraham. And when we were over there, we went up into the steeple, way up, you know, like six flights of stairs up into the steeple. And the old church bell, which doesn't work anymore, says a gift from the Unitarian Church of Montclair in 1924. So that was when the bells had been taken out of the church steeples during World War I to make bullets, and the church had no bell. So Montclair Unitarian Church paid for a new bell for them so they could have a bell back in the steeple. And this is the church where Judith Gelliard's father was the minister. And she writes, "The only handwritten copy of my father's dissertation survived in the attic of our parsonage, only because he knew that the secret police were coming in to arrest him that night, and he hid it there. His library and other manuscripts were all confiscated when the house was searched. Many years after his death, but still under Ceausescu, the two manuscript volumes were smuggled out of Romania along with other precious historic documents, sewn into George's backpack." That's her husband. "Among them was my mother's fascinating life story describing how she was harassed by the secret police for 25 years. And this one's also interesting. The library at Kerestur. Kerestur is a fairly large town where the Unitarian one of the Unitarian high schools was located. They have a big library, Unitarian library there. The library at Kerestur was scattered, annihilated. 43 years later, after Ceausescu's fall, the minister finally dared to whisper the secret that my father, who was a teacher at the college as well as parish minister, had rescued the most precious Unitarian materials in this collection by simply stealing them the night before the confiscation. This was no small political risk, especially since the fellow minister who told us this secret turned out to have been a secret police informer. Fortunately, he loved the church well enough to keep silent. So you even had Unitarian ministers working for the state secret police. It was just a terrible, terrible era. If anybody's interested in reading any of this stuff, you can find a lot of this material on the Partner Church Council website. It's uupcc.org. And there's a lot more than I'm telling today. I just mentioned briefly, the denomination over there has two Unitarian high schools, one in Székelyföld and one in Kolozsvár, and they have a very, very high academic standard. A lot of the students there come in from the countryside and live in the dorm, which is up on the fourth floor of the high school, and it shares the building with the denomination headquarters in Kolozsvár. It's a beautiful old Baroque building, which doesn't really look like a school that much, but it's a beautiful building. They have good foreign language instruction. The funny thing about the school is that it houses the Unitarian High School and the Calvinist High School in the same building, but the hallways change color as you move between denominations. So you know you're in the Unitarian wing if it's yellow, and when you go to the Calvinist wing, it's blue. So the students have core curriculum courses together, but the religious instruction and anything philosophical is partitioned. So math might be together, gym is together, that type of thing. I think I mentioned this already. The Unitarian denomination is thriving over there now, especially out in the countryside. But one thing, it's very different over there. In the United States, our denomination tends to be fairly well-educated and typically fairly well-off. And this is the polar opposite over in Transylvania, because the members of the Unitarian denomination are typically farmers or factory workers, and a lot of them just have high school or less than high school education, and a lot of them are very, very poor. So that's one reason the churches in the United States give quite a bit of contribution to the Transylvanian Unitarian churches. The parishioners just simply can't afford to do it. There are still people riding on horse carts. I mean, if you're in Bucharest or something like that, it's very contemporary. Even Kolozsvár is very contemporary. But out in the Hargita County is in the middle of nowhere. It's hard to describe, but if you're in a very, very rural part of upstate New York with just a little bunch of small towns around, that's sort of how rural it is. And you still see horse carts, you still see beat-up old Russian cars and all kinds of things. I'm running out of time very shortly here, actually. Let me tell you a few more things. We, as our congregation, donates about $1,500 to $1,800 a year to our partner congregation in St. Abraham. And simply because of what I said, they don't have very much money over there. I'm just going to give you a list of four of the donations we made that helped them out. A couple years ago, we made a donation. Our donation, which was $1,500, I believe that year might have been $1,600, put electricity in the church building for the first time ever. This is how rural it is over there. I mean, there was no, they had candles at night and just daylight in the daytime. We put heat and thermal pane windows in the parsonage. The parsonage, when I was over there, had a wood stove in the living room and nothing in any of the bedrooms or in the kitchen. So they slept in the living room during the winter, and the kitchen stove kept it warm in the kitchen. Last year, we made a donation to restore what I was talking about. It's an 1848 Balash Moses tracker action organ in the sanctuary. It's one of five remaining. I was hoping to get a DVD today of the dedication concert of the organ, but it didn't come on time. So, and then one year when Jakob Danish retired, we gave a retirement gift to him to help him build his retirement house. That was a couple years ago as well. Now, some milestones. I guess I'm okay. Jakob Danish Sr., who was our partner church minister for, you know, about 20 years, died recently. It was earlier this year. It was June 7th, very shortly after his retirement. I mean, he retired at age 70 because it was too exhausting for him to do all of the work of the church, and he retired, and it's probably just not quite 2 years later that he died recently. Bere István took over as minister of our congregation at the retirement of Jakob Danish, and I haven't met him, but Charlie has met him. Charlie was over there a couple years ago, or a year and a half, met him. Bishop Szabo stepped down from the Unitarian as bishop of the, I don't know if you say the Kolozsvár diocese or the bishop of the Transylvanian Unitarians. He stepped down a couple of years ago. Ferenc Balint, who we met when we were over there, has taken over. And Bishop Szabo just recently died about a month ago. He was suffering from cancer. Now, Brian, I've got to get this thing running. I'm going to do Jakob. Bear with me for a minute. Wait for this to. Now we can. Oh, there it is. Okay. All right. I think this is going to run automatically. That's actually in the middle. Let me back up. This is Jakob Danish Jr.'s wedding in Transylvania.
Talk a little bit about these. He had a civil ceremony and then a church ceremony later. Let me stop this and actually I'll do it manually.
I think, let me try to do that. It's going too fast. I'll do this manually, it may be easier. This is they had a civil ceremony in the town hall in Chuuk. This is in that area. It gives you, it's going to be wedding pictures, but it'll also give you a little feel for the look of the area and the churches in the area. That's out in front of the city hall where they got married. Now, many of you met Danish Jr. when he was here a few years ago, but you've never met his wife. The guy standing against the red background is Zsolt Jakob. He's Jakob Danish's son and Junior's brother. He's a minister, he's a Unitarian minister in Nirseke Keresztúr. This is a traditional gate in front of a Transylvanian farmhouse. They all have these, a stone wall and then a traditional gate with a lot of hand carving on it. They're very, very beautiful, and each house has a different style. They're all hand done with a slightly different style depending on the family. This is in the sanctuary during the wedding. Danish Jr. and his wife and Zsolt, his brother, who's a minister. This is typical of the Transylvanian sanctuaries, the blue seats with the red and white embroidered cloth. This is very, very characteristic architectural design over there. Again, the minister behind the minister in front is Harold Babcock from Newburyport, Massachusetts. He's known this family very well for a long time as part of the Partner Church Council. And the wedding was in Hungarian and in English. Typical church design.
pulpit is up in the air in all of these churches, almost like a traditional Catholic church. The door to the church. Pictures to this. The guy on the left is the younger brother of Jakob Danish and his girlfriend. Then they had a reception at the wedding. He looks happy. Oh, now I'm back to the beginning. Let's see a few more. This is just at the town hall registering the marriage. That's where we started, I guess. Okay, now let me tell you, let me shut this one. I'm gonna get one more slide at the very end, so I'll leave this on. A lot of the information that I spoke about is available on uupcc.org, including the newsletters. If you've never read one of the Partner Church newsletters, take a look at uupcc.org and just go to newsletters. They're 20 to 25 pages long and contain all kinds of interesting things. One other thing I want to mention is the Partner Church Council does all kinds of interesting tours to the area. We did one that was specially arranged for our congregation to visit our partner congregation, but they can arrange almost anything. They also have prearranged tours where you can join another group. Some people from Summit go quite frequently. You could join another group, that type of thing. They also have the special tour extension to Maramureș and Bukovina to see the old the UNESCO historic sites, the frescoed Orthodox churches up in the northeast part of Romania. It's what was Bukovina at one point, but it's in Romania now. These 12th century churches have frescoes. They're Orthodox. Very interesting architecture. They have frescoes on the inside and the outside, which makes them extremely interesting. There's a tour to the Khasi Hills in the northern part of India coming up in February, but it's almost fully booked. And then there's going to be a tour of the Philippines, the Unitarian area of the Philippines coming up later this year. Now, if I can just take a minute, I want to tell a slightly funny story, but I need a slide. You remember those guys? Most of you, let's turn the lights on, you can't see. All right, not those guys, no, that's. Those guys. Most of you who are my age or older will remember Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff, who are associated with the old films about Transylvania. Now, we learned a very, very interesting story over there. Dracula was not known in Romania until after Ceausescu died. And we associate that legend with Romania and Transylvania. And Dracula's a British invention. Bram Stoker wrote the original novel, and then American television and films got it. But the communist government and even the earlier governments had censored most of the stuff coming out of Hollywood. So that 1931 film where Bela Lugosi played Dracula was first seen in Romania in 1990. And nobody has any idea who Dracula is in over there, although now, because it's affiliated with Transylvania, there's all kinds of Dracula tourist attractions now, so they've made it a money-making business. And they have the castle they call Dracula's castle was just one of the queens of old Romania who lived there. So it's just a very, very funny story. So on that note, I'll finish.
Please join me in a spirit of prayer and meditation. O Spirit of life-giving love and love-giving life, let us remember our distant relatives over in Europe and Transylvania and the struggles they've had and the way that they've adapted to difficult times and how much they appreciate their connections with us and how much we've learned to appreciate our connections with them. Understand they have three seasons in Transylvania, the planting season, the harvest season, and winter. So they're entering into their winter and I believe celebrating the first Sunday of Advent today. Thank you, Bruce, for all you've shared with us this morning. Blessed be and amen. Our closing words are by W.E.B. Du Bois. He wrote that now is the accepted time, not tomorrow, not some more convenient season. It is today that our best work can be done, and not some future day or future year. It is today that we fit ourselves for the greater usefulness of tomorrow. Today is the seed time. Now are the hours of work, and tomorrow comes the harvest and the playtime. May the prayers of our hearts and the songs of our lips shared in this holy hour of worship be with us now and all the days to come. As we extinguish our chalice, our worship has ended. Let our service begin. Blessed be.